People talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight, griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and falling down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They live on milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and it's hard and I'd be. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down where life, I'm fighting. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on White Resistance Radio. .com. Go there. Deal with a number of issues tonight. Oh yeah, but geez, you know, it's funny, you know, when you run into really great information. Yesterday, I was on my way from hotel to the airport in Edmonton, Alberta, on my way back to Canada after a very successful meeting on Thursday night in Edmonton, and at the on my way to the airport, I was talking to the shuttle driver, and what happened was we were at a light, and the light turned green, and the car ahead of us, the car closest to the light moved ahead. The car ahead of us just sat there, and finally the shuttle driver had to lean on the horn. He said the guy was texting. Now, I'm not opposed to texting, actually, if you're stopped. I know it's probably against the law in many places, but anyway, yeah, the guy was preoccupied, and then the driver went on to make a number of comments about bad drivers, and he said, you know, there's something wrong with this country. He said, there's no real vetting of people getting a driver's license. He says, it's easy to get a driver's license, even if you don't speak English and don't know anything about the rules of the road, because you simply pay somebody either to take the test for you, or according to him, many of the people who administer the tests are bribable. So for $50 or $100, you walk away with what appears to be a valid driver's license, which now means that all the other people on the road are now, are in some danger because of you. Well, I pointed out to him that I have a problem with anybody getting a driver's license who cannot speak English or read English. Oh, I'll tell you why. Well, I have been in Japan, for instance, and most of the road signs are in, needless to say, in Japanese. There's no way I would consider for a moment renting a car there and driving. No, because I cannot read the signs. Frankly, I wouldn't know really where I'm going. Well, that would make me a very dangerous driver. Anyway, I found his comments, I don't think I mentioned, in heavily accented English. I found his comments very interesting. I said, well, where did you come from? He said, Cuba. And it drives home to me that many immigrants coming to Canada recognize what a scammed system we have. Bends over backwards to accommodate people who should never be accommodated. Well, here is what might be called an object lesson, and it's too bad that anybody would have to suffer like this. But I'll tell you the story, and then we'll make some comments. Silva Koshwal, sentenced to at least 18 years in jail for the murder of Nadine Scow. Now, this is a story out of Edmonton. Nadine Scow is white. She's European. Probably Polish. Silva Koshwal. Now, you don't have the advantage of being able to look at a picture here. But Silva Koshwal is black. He's from the Sudan. Now, here's the story. Silva Koshwal must spend at least 18 years in prison for being allowed to apply before being allowed to apply for parole, a judge ruled on Thursday. Koshwal was convicted in August of murdering ex-girlfriend Nadine Scow in her bedroom 4 years ago. He showed no signs of emotion as Court of Queen's Bench Judge Sterling Sanderman gave his decision. On August 24, 2015, August 24, 2015 murder was one of Edmonton's most gruesome in recent history. Scow, this is the woman, the girlfriend of the killer, was stabbed over 100 times. The majority of the wounds inflicted while she was still alive. Which also sort of suggests that he continued to stab her after she was dead. First responders found her heart pinned to a bedroom wall with a knife. Five of her organs had been removed from her body, including the ovaries, uterus, and part of a lung. Let's have that one more time. Not for the sake of being gruesome, but just to embed it in your mind. First responders found her heart pinned to a bedroom wall with a knife. Five of her organs had been removed from her body, including the ovaries, uterus, and part of a lung. Crown Prosecutor Laurie Trahan said at least one police officer had to take stress leave after attending the scene. Veteran homicide detective Bill Clark called it, quote, probably one of the most horrific he'd seen in his career as a police officer. Alberta's chief medical examiner told Trahan, that's the prosecutor, that Scow's autopsy was one of the most difficult of her career, saying it took almost four times as long as a typical homicide postmortem. I mean, she was butchered. Scow's family and friends said they struggled to understand why Scow was taken from them so violently. Her father, Harvey, however, said that Thursday's decision brings a measure of closure. Koshwal admitted at the start of the five-day trial this August to second-degree murder and indignity to human remains. The trial came down to one issue. Could Koshwal be found not criminally responsible by reason of mental disorder? So there's no question he did it. He admitted he did it. It's really just, was he too much of a nutter to... I know. We should put that differently, phrase that differently, shouldn't we? Defense counsel Peter Royal relied on the evidence of forensic psychologist Leslie Block, who spoke with Koshwal for about 11 hours. Block concluded Koshwal suffers from severe PTSD, that's post-traumatic stress disorder, related to life in war-torn Sudan. which he fled as a refugee. He said Karschwall was severely paranoid in the lead up to Scow's killing, in some cases sleeping with an axe. He suffered from flashbacks and hallucinations and was doing drugs and was using drugs and alcohol. Block said that could have contributed to a psychotic break. He suggested Scow's plan to leave him and move away from the neighborhood could have contributed to his break from reality. Sanderman, that's the judge, ultimately did not accept Block's evidence, siding instead with Crown witness Dr. Roger Brown. Brown, a psychiatrist, concluded Karschwall suffered from major depressive disorder, some PTSD, and alcohol use disorder, none of which were likely to contribute to a dissociative state. So in other words, he knew what he was doing. In the author's opinion, the injuries inflicted to Miss Scow were deliberate and would have required sustained attention and effort, Dr. Brown wrote. It appears the assailant would have required the ability to understand the actions. Second-degree murder carries an automatic life sentence with parole eligibility set between 10 and 25 years. Even if someone is released, they are on parole for the rest of their lives. At a sentencing hearing on Wednesday, defense counsel Royal argued for parole to be set for 10 to 12 years. The judge rejected that, stated, acknowledging the horror of the crime, saying it was hard to imagine a more degradation of another human being. There were 16 victim impact statements that were given. A few of those victim impact statements were highly inappropriate. He said, nothing is gained by demonizing Mr. Karschwall's family or invoking the powers of Satan. Oh. Anyway, Karschwall has been in jail since he turned himself in after the crime. Okay, well, lessons to be learned. Well, all right. First of all, what was this Karschwall creature from Somalia, the Sudan doing in Canada? Well, we don't know. Well, yeah, we sort of do know. He came as a refugee. All righty. How was he vetted? Who let him in? And I don't mean they did, the government, the immigration department. No, specifically, who signed off on this character? Now, even refugees are supposed to be given a medical examination and go through some form of criminal records or security check. Now, granted, these criminal records and security checks are probably mostly illusory because somebody like this fellow comes from the Sudan, but they probably don't have a very up-to-date, very effective records-keeping system. But okay, well, what about the health? Now, who signed off on this? Was sign of mental illness not noted? Was it? It was ignored? Well, we'd like to know. See, well, that's one of the problems with our system here. There's the lack of accountability. You know, if you don't pay your taxes, they come after you. They'll garnish your wages, might even seize your house. You know, you are accountable. But our government, in many ways, is not accountable for their villainy. Somebody screwed up. I'll take it a step further. The system is very ill-advised to take people without. See, we don't know much in the way of specifics. We say we are told that there's post-traumatic stress syndrome because of things he'd been through in the Sudan. Well, we don't know what those things are. On the one hand, people might feel sympathetic. Oh, person has been through terrible things in the Sudan. I mean, assuming that's true. So we'll give them a place in Canada. But are damaged people really what we should be looking for? And I think that's a pretty important question. If indeed this guy was damaged, is there any reason to believe that as soon as he comes to Canada, all will be well? Well, all was not well. He, depending on whom you listen to, was depressed, had some PTSD or had a lot of just want to be accurate here. PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. Even the psychiatrist couldn't agree whether he had a lot of it or a little of it. But his mental instability, if that's what it was, rather than just demonic evil, was aggravated by abuse of drugs and alcohol. So, I mean, he was responsible, and I think the judge made the right call in that case. He was responsible for what he did. Apparently, the situation also aggravated by the fact that the woman who was murdered was going to leave him. Now, right at the very beginning, I said she was white, I believe of Polish or Ukrainian background, and he's from the Sudan. Is there anything else wrong about this? Well, not to be too coy about it, she was a mud shark. That's right. One of these morally weak white women who feel bizarrely attracted to Negroes. Now, up until perhaps 40 or 50 years ago, her parents would have counseled her, don't do that. Not a wise thing to do. Now, of course, parents today would be, well, good parents will still do that in counseling their daughters. Many parents are afraid. Afraid of what? Right, you could almost yell out to me, afraid of being called, racist. So rather than be a racist, keep your daughter ignorant. Hope that maybe she has good instincts, or maybe learns from other people's mistakes, but somehow just hope everything will be okay, but don't say anything. That would be racist. Now, I don't know what her parents told her. We're not told that here. Apparently, some of the people were writing victim impact statements, which the judge furiously rejected, made comments about this monster Koshwal's family. Perhaps these comments might have been considered, racist. Well, racism, what is denounced as racism, actually contained a lot of good common sense based on human nature and human experience. When I was growing up in the 50s and 60s, people in my family were urged not to get involved in a mixed marriage. What did that mean? Well, back in those relatively innocent days, a mixed marriage was a marriage with somebody, usually a Christian, of another Christian faith. So in other words, Catholics were strongly urged not to marry Protestants, and many Protestants were similarly urged not to marry Catholics, or maybe even other types of Protestants. Now, some did, but in those times, the advice was don't marry outside your religion. Now, there were some religious reasons for that, but there was also some practical reasons. When two people join their lives together, there's quite a lot of adjustment and accommodation that has to be made, right? A woman has to learn to live with a man's peculiarities and vice versa, in all sorts of ways. So there's always a yes, there's an attraction, hopefully, but there's also a lot of compromise that has to be done, has to be made. And the more the differences, the more the compromises. And compromises are always difficult. It was always put to us, if you take your Catholic faith seriously, do you want to marry a Protestant who may take their particular interpretation of the Christian religion seriously? Well, then how do you raise the children? Well, the teaching of the church, at least in those days, was they must be raised as Catholics. Well, is the other partner cruel with that, or would they feel, well, somehow I'm a second-class citizen? Those are some of the compromises or the thinking that went on in terms of people who essentially shared a great deal in the same religion. You know, whether it's the Catholic interpretation of Christianity or various forms of the Protestant interpretation, there are a lot of similarities. How much more difficult would it have been if you had wanted to marry a Muslim? Or a Hindu, because there's far less commonality. Mixed marriage, when I was growing up, didn't mean different races. I mean, it was inconceivable to people of my parents' generation that, you know, I might come home with a negress or something. that wasn't in the cards. anyway, this may be a bit of a digression, but it comes back to the old common sense observation against race mixing or miscegenation for a variety of reasons. Number one, if you breed with a race radically different from your own, the offspring is nothing. If she had conceived by this monster, the offspring would not have been black, would not have been white. Would have come from two radically different cultures. Okay, so there's a racial reason not for avoiding miscegenation. There's also very good cultural reason. Somebody, especially this one from Africa, comes out of a radically different culture than a lady from Alberta. He comes out, we're not even sure what his religion is, but he comes out of an African culture. He comes from a very violent and savage part of the world. In addition to all the other accommodations that have to be made when a man and a woman bind their lives together, whether in marriage, he wasn't married to her, but you know, or even in a serious sexual relationship. To bridge the gap between this monster from Africa and this ill-advised woman from Alberta is huge. The experience of many white women with black men is not a pleasant one. And those of you who cruise the internet have seen many of these news compilations of white women who have been severely brutalized or outright murdered by their black boyfriend or husband. No, it doesn't happen in every case, of course, but it happens in many cases. Violence and brutality. There's some bad stuff going on here. And some of the bad stuff is the sense of conquest by the blacks. We're getting back at the white man, we've got his woman. And when you own a woman as a slave, or like a slave, well, if she displeases you, you feel perhaps free to hurt her. Maybe only by punching her and striking her, or maybe by, in this case, stab the woman over 100 times. This is a sad lesson and a warning, but a warning that I suspect will not be highlighted. I'll tell you why, because of course it goes against the prevailing or the cultural Marxist doctrine of equality. We're all equal, we're all the same, we're all interchangeable. Whether she was to mate with this monster from the Sudan or an Aborigine from Australia or Joe Smith next door, it's all the same. We're all interchangeable, but we're not. We bring a lot with us. We bring our culture. I suspect, and this is something that I think is a very big challenge for parents and grandparents, we owe it to our children and our grandchildren to be honest, even at the risk of being called a racist, to explain that it's just not good to mate with people from other races. Some relationships more dangerous than others. And white women particularly, I think, have to be told that this is highly risky behavior. And of course, the white women will not be told that by the education system, which will tell them just the opposite. By the human rights mafia, which will tell them just the opposite. By the mass media, which will tell them just the opposite. By the business establishment, which doesn't give a flying flip. And in almost every case, they'll not be told that by the churches. So they must be told that by authority figures in their family, preferably by their parents or their grandparents or a caring aunt or uncle or a friend. That this is, because, you know, much as I've thought that most people instinctively do not want a relationship with the opposite, with another race, I think that probably is true, most, many. But with all the propaganda in the environment we live in, some may struggle with their instincts, or may have weak instincts and simply not see that this is that such a relationship would not be a good idea. And this is where our counseling has to come in. This woman paid. This woman from Edmonton, she seems like a picture from her, a nice looking lady, Nadine Scow, paid a horrific price for being a mud shark, a price she shouldn't have had to pay, in a decent world. But in a decent world, this monster would not have been in this country. We used to be able to protect our women. Well, speaking about the vile forces stacked against us. Andrew Scheer, who is a weak man and a globalist, is a committed Christian. He is opposed to same-sex marriage. He is opposed to abortion. And, on that, good for him. He's the leader of the Conservative Party. His party did quite well in the last federal election, but it was expected that they would beat the trust fund kid, Justin Trudeau, and his Liberals. That did not come to pass. Andrew Scheer's Conservatives got more of the popular vote, but did not get a majority of the seats. Neither did Justin Trudeau, but Justin Trudeau got, I believe, it was 156 seats, and Andrew Scheer got 121. No party has an outright majority, because there are other minor parties. Anyway, ever since the election, there has been an absolute howl by red Tories. These are, what might be called country club Republicans in the United States. We call them red Tories. That is, they're socially leftist. They may be semi conservative on economics. And of course the media in full howl, and the Globe and Mail, which is the queer-friendly newspaper in Toronto, which is always promoting the homosexual agenda. Anyway, the howling message is this: Andrew Scheer should step down as leader, or if he's going to stay on as leader, he's got to mend his ways and, for instance, announce that he will march in gay pride parades, and that he not only accepts same-sex marriage as the law, but welcomes it. And as to abortion, that's every woman's right to exterminate her child right up until the moment that its head pops out of the womb. But those are not his beliefs. Well, anyway, there's been a drumbeat that he'll be unelectable. Conservatives will be unelectable unless they show themselves to be 110% for the LGBTQ agenda. Well, how can you? The law may indeed recognize same-sex marriage. That doesn't mean I have to applaud it. The law says most highways, the speed limit is 100 kilometers an hour or 60 miles an hour, give or take. I think on many big highways, that's artificially low. So I may recognize that's the law. I don't have to agree with it. I don't have to say, yay! We have to remember that the LGBTQ crowd constitute about 1% of the population. So you would say, in general, it ought not to be a minority that a party should have to twist itself into a pretzel to please. Don't forget, one of the values we're always being told about, of course, is diversity. Oh, we're all for diversity, right? Yeah. But not diversity of opinion. No. You've got to be for the LGBTQ agenda. But why? Well, you can't win without it. You can't win if you're not, if you basically are anything other than a Christian-hating leftist. Well, okay, you could be a Christian, but just shut up about it. Don't say anything. Now, this is all a crock. Now, where Andrew Scheer was, I think, unfairly, but repeatedly challenged about his personal beliefs. He handled it badly, whether through his own lack of commitment or whatever. One doesn't know. But he handled it badly. What he should have done is to have stated, I'm a believing Christian. Where the law has already spoken, I respect that and recognize it. But I believe in the sanctity of life. And I believe that the only real marriage is between a man and a woman. Not two women, not two men, not a man and a goat, a man and a woman. Now, the law may say differently, that's what the law is, but those are my beliefs. Now, I think many people would respect that. The radical LGBTQ lobby would not, and some of the cultural Marxists would not. Unfortunately, Scheer seemed to waffle and look weak. And also look, either to believing Christians, he looked maybe not really all that committed. And then to others, he looks devious, so he's got a hidden agenda. And that plays into something that's always being said of social conservatives, that they have a hidden agenda. Why not say, well, look, we have beliefs. Others have different beliefs. All of these beliefs should be aired. Where conflicting beliefs normally are aired in Parliament. But there is a tremendous pressure within, some of it within the party, and a lot of it from without the party, to either drive Scheer off the stage and get some wishy-washy person who basically has no position, basically complete leftist on social issues, but they're sort of economically conservative. Now, I'm not particularly personally invested in Andrew Scheer's political fate. I think he's been a weak leader, and many of his policies are not policies I support. But that's some of the pressure that's going on right now. Well, a former prime minister, and I guess if you wait long enough, people forget, it was Brian Mulroney. He was prime minister from 1984 to 1993. He was a red Tory. He continued or upped
the immigration invasion.
So he did very little of the things that really would matter to a nationalist. In fact, eventually he alienated people that a whole new populist party formed in 1987 called the Reform Party. But anyway, that's another matter. He left office very, very unpopular. In fact, he left office and he was known as Lion Brian. Lion Brian, you know, Lion Brian LaRoy. I'll leave aside any comments as to whether that was entirely deserved or not. But anyway, he popped up recently and he was critical of he said Canada is not doing its part on the world stage. He criticized the trust fund kid who, as Justin Trudeau, when he was elected in 2015, he said, Canada is back. We're back on the world stage. And he went to the Davos meeting in Davos and preened himself and got a big pat on the back from arch-conspirator George Soros. And he promised more foreign aid, and he promised aid for various women's projects here and there. But according to Brian Mulroney, the aid is still rather paltry. The Conservatives, and this is one of the few good stands that Andrew Scheer took, promised to massively cut foreign aid. Well, Brian Mulroney said, this is just not good. Canada has to really get back on the world stage, not just through posturing, but must actually put its money where its mouth is and should be upping foreign aid, and because that's the only way we're going to get elected to a seat on the Security Council. These seats come up every few years, and there's strong competition because that's not exactly the same thing as the executive, but it's like the executive of the United Nations. Well, Trudeau desperately wants Canada to have that a seat. We're in stiff competition, apparently, with Ireland and Norway. So the way to get more third world votes, Mulroney didn't say quite in these terms, is we've got to be doing our part, which means putting a lot of money into it. Well, frankly, I think the United Nations is a catastrophe, and it's not worth spending 1 cent to try to buy our way onto the Security Council. But anyway, apparently, Mulroney's remarks were part of a event that was held on Thursday, I believe, by the United Nations Association of Canada. And he gave us a speech. There's a picture of him in a big ad in the paper. And this was part of the ceremony was to award the Canada Global Citizen to one Waleed Soliman, Global and Canadian Chair. Waleed Soliman? The United Nations Association in Canada is pleased to announce Waleed Soliman as the Association's Global Citizen Laureate. Frankly, I'd want nothing to do with that. Global citizen? What about a decent Canadian citizen? Waleed Soliman is the global chair and Canadian chair. He's a chair. I thought it was a man. I think they mean chairman. Of Norton Rose Fulbright. And he's achieved significant prominence as a shareholder, activism, lawyer. He's been acknowledged many times by his peers for his professional excellence as a longtime advocate of diversity, inclusion, and mental health issues. I've got to laugh, right? He's an advocate of diversity, inclusion, and mental health issues. I'd say that diversity and inclusion are mental health issues because they're lies. He believes that Canada is strengthened when advancement is open to all. Mr. Soliman translates his positive vision for a better world into involvement in his community. And what's he done? He's been to the Six Kids Hospital. The United Nations Association of Canada will host the 2019 Global Citizens Dinner in his honor at the Royal Canadian Museum. Well, and they had it, of course, on Thursday. And in a presentation by Catherine White, President of the United Nations Association of Canada, she said that Waleed is a global citizen deeply engaged with the world around him and clear in meeting his responsibilities to contribute to his society. Blah, 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 blah. Well, anyway, who's supporting all this stuff? Well, here's a list of sponsors. Apollo Health and Beauty Care, don't know them. Bell, that's a major telecommunications network in Canada. Canadian Tire sells auto and other products. Sobeys, a major grocery chain. Deloitte, an accountancy firm. Manulife and Sun Life, these are both huge insurance firms. Unifor, they're a trade union outfit. The National Bank, the Royal Bank, Power Corporation. Many of these are big globalist companies. And, you know, if you'd like the list of these people, I'll just ask me and I'll send them to you. But if you're a shareholder of any of these, I would protest. What's our money going promoting this globalism, this citizen of the world? No, why don't we promote citizens of Canada? I mean, or I should say citizens whose primary loyalty is to Canada. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side. I mean, going to take a bit of a break here for my musical interlude this evening. It's a bit of a change of pace. And here's a man who brought the country and western sound from California. There was it's often called Bakersfield sound to Nashville in the 1960s. Some people called that sound after this man, Buck Owens, the Buckersfield sound rather than Bakersfield. Anyway, Buck Owens. Singer, entertainer.
Oh, the sun's gonna shine in my life once more. Love's gonna live here again. Things are gonna be the way they were before.
Oh,
Bakersfield. Say you don't know me, but you don't like me. Say you care less how I feel. But how many of you listen to just me? Ever walk the streets of Bakersfield?
do you do when your computer crashes and all those memories you've stored for years are wiped out? Well, fuck the rain, fuck that.
That's Buck Owens, and this is Paul Frohn. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon, all of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Frohn, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save